Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you off and running here on this Friday, July 24th, 2026. Hope everybody had a great week. Bill Buckmaster, along with Brendan Kraft, our fine young engineer and producer on the other side of the glass. He'll be engineering and giving us some, as usual, great bumper music in between segments. We welcome you to the show from broadcasting from Central Tucson. We're in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, this radio station, one of a handful that we have under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. We do now the weekly edition of the Buckmaster Show. Our tradition began 15 and a half years ago as a daily program, and then after the first of the year, I quote, semi-retired, doing the Friday-only show from noon to one, and we're happy the way that is going. You can listen to all of our programs. Got pretty much every show, not pretty much, we do have every show archived on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is becoming, Paul Ingram, almost an historic document.
I mean, at this point, it's going to be a fascinating document. You need to put it, send it to the U of A library at some point.
We do at some point over to Special Collections, because when I think about when we started the radio show in January of 2011, after 22 years on Channel 6, our first week on the air, Monica Prieto is here as well, the police chief. Great to see you, Chief. Thanks for being with you. Wanted to tell this little story that first week, the Thursday of the first week, was Gabrielle Giffords doing an interview with us. The last interview, last one-on-one interview that Gabby gave before the assassination attempt, that horrible Saturday, January 11th.
8th,
excuse me. I was thinking of 9/11.
Yeah.
Okay, January 8th of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of things we've got at buckmastershow.com. All of those programs that we have done are there, so that's kind of cool.
That is very cool.
All right, when we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, a couple of media partner shout-outs, TucsonSentinel.com, and Paul Ingram is the senior reporter and award-winning photographer, best in show, is the or is that dog show?
No, it's best in show.
Best
sure.
in show. Photographer Paul Ingram, senior reporter, TucsonSentinel.com. We have a wonderful relationship with the Sentinel. They've been one of our media partners since we launched the radio show in 2011. Also a media partner, Green Valley News and Saharita's son, Dan Shear, and his team there. Our Friday Focus interview is with the Tucson Police Chief, Monica Prieto, who has led Southern Arizona's largest police agency since February, when she replaced Chad Kazmar. Chad went on to work as one of the assistant Pima County administrators. Paul, I think there are five, aren't there?
Something? There are three. Oh. He's one of three.
One of three.
One of three main people underneath Jan Lesher.
Okay.
And maybe we'll see someday.
Is he going for the big job, have you heard? Or
I don't know yet. I mean, Jan's there's a kind of question. I mean, Jan said she's leaving. So somebody's going to need to pick up the big job.
I always like to hire local when somebody leaves. Mm-hmm. I know they're doing a big national search. But anyway, Monica Prieto, born and raised in Tucson. Chief Prieto began her 26 years now with TPD, began in 1966, right?
99.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
That's why math was not one of my... No, okay. Began in 99 after graduating from the University of Arizona. We were talking before the show that you were pursuing a career in public administration, right?
That is correct.
And that's what your undergraduate degree is in?
Correct.
You worked your way up to the ranks, serving in a wide range of operational investigative assignment positions, and now you are leading the Tucson Police Department. How has that gone for you so far?
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm truly blessed to have this job as chief, right? I get to work with 1,200 of Tucson's finest individuals that are committed to the safety of the community. So I can tell you that things have settled a little bit in the last 6 months, which has been better for me, I can tell mm-hmm. you that. The initial couple months transition, as you know, because it was unexpected, it could be overwhelming at times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a huge learning curve, I'm sure.
It is, yeah. Even though I was second in command.
But when you're the top cop, suddenly everything changes, right?
It's a large responsibility.
This has been a very difficult week. I mentioned about the Giffords assassination attempt back in 2011, and what we had early Sunday morning really was the biggest shooting events since that time, with that 2 a.m. Sunday morning event that left 10 people injured, including the suspect. When you look at that incident, police here in Tucson that were involved there and the fire department are getting kudos, and I believe everything from I've heard, well-deserved. New York Post had a headline, Tucson's hero cop. Police and fire were responding within 2 minutes to the scene. You've got to be proud of your cops.
I could not be more proud of our officers who heard the gunfire, immediately ran towards it, addressed the shooter who had a gun, and obviously they began to render aid for all the victims, including the mm-hmm. Including the suspect, gunshot wound victims. So incredible props to our officers who acted immediately and saved lives, no doubt.
How much presence was there of police at that hour of the night downtown?
Yeah, we had about 20 officers in that area, five patrol sergeants and two community service officers. We have had a heavy visible presence on the weekends downtown.
So that would be typical then?
It is typical, yeah. Since about the summer of 2021, we began placing, heavier presence down there just to make sure everybody felt the presence that we were going to be able to address issues as they came up.
Mm-hmm. One thing I think you said interesting yesterday was that the officers responded and were at the scene where before the 911 calls even went through.
Yeah, before even a 911 call could come through, everything was finished. The suspect mm-hmm. had been taken into custody.
Would that be because the officers in the scene may have heard the gunshots then, right?
Yeah, they were standing. They were standing nearby. I mean, we had officers on both ends of that block, mm-hmm. and so immediately upon hearing the shots, I mean, it's within under 10 seconds that we get there and address the issue.
Here's Paul Ingram from Tucson Sentinel.
Well, one thing I think maybe we need to talk about is you had 25 officers within the downtown district. What's sort of give us the kind of geography of that real quick. What does that space look like?
Yeah, so you have the 4th Avenue corridor, of course, and then you have, sorry about that, and you have the Congress corridor. So those are the heavier areas where we put, because you have a lot of the bars that are open late, the different restaurants that are open late in that area, that's tends to be where everybody gathers after nighttime hours, in the nighttime hours after club shutdown.
And you said it was after 2021. Was there something in particular that made the TPD want to put officers down there, or was it just a response to maybe issues that were appearing or continuing, or just because it's just busy down there?
So I think it's because it's busy. So I don't recall. I mean, that's a long time ago, and I don't sure. recall specifics as to why. But we have a great partnership with the Downtown Tucson Partnership folks mm-hmm. In Rio Nuevo, and we work very well with them in terms of trying to determine where exactly we should place our resources and what time.
Go ahead, Paul, if you had another follow-up.
So, there's been, of course, after shooting, there was a lot of criticism, especially from one of the businesses down there, specifically about, I think one of the questions was, were the cops in the right place? I think there was a criticism of saying, well, they're at the bus stop, which maybe isn't where they should be, but it sounds like you had people in lots of different places. So, I mean, TPD being down, are there enough officers that are down in downtown to deal with the issues that you see crop up in normal times?
Well, I think, I mean, to answer part of that question is, like, we were there and we were there to, like I said, address the issue immediately. So there were cops there, and then, you know, in terms of staffing, of course, if I could get back to staffing levels that we were at in 2008, where we had 1,100 and I believe 30 officers, of course I would love to have that. And the more officers you have, the more that we can get out there in the community and be present, and you know, and essentially, you know, keep crime from happening in certain areas. Of course, I do feel like, you know, just our presence alone keeps crime at bay, right?
What are those numbers, Chief? You mentioned 11.
How many sworn officers do you have?
Yeah, we are
at about 815 sworn officers, but about 70 of those are trainers and recruits. So, you know, not the ones that we can put out, but 815 total sworn numbers. Mm-hmm. We are trying to get to a place where we can get up to 911. My goal is to be at that number by next year. We did get approval from Mayor and Council to add those 50 positions, and our recruiting team has done an amazing job with putting advertisements out, and it's really exciting because, you know, even in 2024 we were seeing about 200 to 300 applicants, and now, like this year, we're seeing up to 700, I believe over 700 this last process. So we're getting the word out there. I believe because we're such a large agency and we have so much opportunity to offer people and great benefits, you know, I think that is driving people in to apply. Of course, they have to go through the application process, which can be difficult. But it's exciting to see that we have more people wanting to do it. So again, the goal would be to be up at 911 by next year.
What's the, and how many officers are you losing each year? There's always a certain amount of attrition. For officers, I mean, I think there's been a long-term issue of like people coming into TPD, doing TPD for a little while, and then leaving to some of the other cities or localities because they pay a little bit better, maybe the job's a little bit easier. You know, do you have a sense of like how many officers do you lose versus how many do you have coming in?
Yeah, we attrit about, so the last couple of months we were attriting 4. On average, before that we were at about 6. And that's because, you know, people retire. Most of it is people retiring.
Sure.
Getting their 20 years in or 25 years and, you know, and retiring. But it's been pretty consistent. Between 4 and 6.
Tucson Police Chief Monica Prieto is our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show. And before we take our first break, so was attrition and people leaving, because you mentioned at one point, what was it, how many sworn officers did we have?
1,100.
Yeah. That sounds like, boy, that'd be terrific if we could get anywhere close to that. But why did we lose then so many? Was attrition a big factor?
Well, I think, you know, I think you had the George Floyd incident and you had a lot of retirements occurring in 2020 and people not, I mean, I think we weren't alone amongst agencies in the nation who were not getting people that wanted to be police officers, you know, because of some of the rhetoric that was out there. And so I think that had a harmful impact, you know, obviously on us, but I feel like we are, you know, we're gaining trust back, and I think a lot of people are kind of looking at it as a career where it could provide a lot of opportunity. And it's not even just about, you know, sworn positions, and even though sworn is the backbone of what we do, but it's also pro staff. We hire 400 professional staff folks, and we use them in our crime labs, our research and analysis division, property evidence, records. So we
they're
are
kind of the foundation.
Absolutely. They are the huge support for our patrol.
Paul, and before we take the first break, I want to circle back to the Sunday morning incident. It reinforces, and Paul, would you agree with me on this? It kind of reinforces this perception that Tucson is just not a safe city.
Oh, I mean, right. I think that's a great question. I mean, I think Chief Prieto, you had some statistics you talked about during the forum yesterday, specifically about how crime. I mean, there's a sense that there people are worried about crime, but crime has been going down pretty consistently since 2022.
Yeah. So in the last year to date, we're 20% down in our non-fatal shootings and 20% down in our homicides. So, but it's still not enough, right? We still have incidents like this. We still have shootings, and it's you know, we. we can't tolerate it. We still have to do better, and we still have to make sure that we are addressing those underlying issues, our gun violence. And that's going to take a lot of work, more than just reactive police work and identifying suspects. It's going to take the preventative and intervention strategies that we talked about yesterday involving our youth, because at least half of the shootings occur, you know, our suspects are under the age of 25.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the motive? Do we know why this person started shooting? Was there two groups that were going at it, or what was going on?
Yeah, so I have to be careful, obviously, because it's an ongoing investigation. But what I can say is it was an argument between two parties. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paul, anything more on that the incident before we take the first break?
Well, let's take the first break and we'll come back to it, because we have, I think, lots of things to talk about.
All right.
Absolutely.
Monica Prieto is here, Tucson's police chief. Paul Ingram joining me in the questioning as we talk with the chief. But before we take the break and hear the recorded messages of the supporters of our program, we thank each of them. I want to talk about my favorite Mexican restaurant, chief. It's El Cisne. I don't know if you've been up there. Which is the Swan in English, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Do you like Mexican food?
Of course. I love it. I've heard great things about it, but I've not eaten there myself.
Well, at El Cisne, chief, you'll find a multicultural fine dining experience representing many regions of Mexico. El Cisne is open every day for lunch and dinner, dine in or take out. And they do a great job catering, and they'll cater a small event. They'll do a big one. They'll come out and set up for you, serve, even do the cleanup for your special occasion. Check it out, El Cisne. I know you're going to have a great meal there. I try to get by there at least once a month. Love it. I like the chicken enchiladas with the green sauce. That's my favorite. With their fresh veggies, it's a terrific, terrific meal. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Okay, take it away, Brendan. We'll be back with segment number two with the chief. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. For more than 30 years, the nonprofit Save the Scenic Santa Ritas has protected Tucson's water and rare Sky Island ecology from large-scale industrial mining in the Santa Rita Mountains south of Tucson. The Santa Rita Mountains include sacred Native American sites, a crucial Sonoran Desert watershed and habitat for endangered species including jaguars and ocelots. Learn more at scenicsantaritas.org. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The voter-approved Regional Transportation Authority Plan is investing in infrastructure improvements throughout our region, including better roads, expanded transit services, and bicycle and pedestrian enhancements across the region. Over the next 20 years, these investments will help our communities move more safely and efficiently. Stay informed and track project progress at rtamobility.com. That's rtamobility.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition, here each Friday, noon to 1. Monica Prieto is here, the Tucson Police Chief, and Paul Ingram, Senior Reporter for TucsonSentinel.com, the fine online news service. Chief, I want to talk a little bit about an area that we've been really working on, you and your team, and that is pedestrian fatalities have really been a problem. Tucson was ranked and is ranked fourth deadliest city for pedestrians by a group called Smart Growth America. What can we do to change that?
Yeah, it is year to date, this year alone, we've had 52 fatalities and 20 of those are pedestrians. So it's obviously a problem that needs attention. Something that we've been working on, but of course, you know, enforcement cannot just be enforcement. It has to be a lot of education. It has to be a change in driving behaviors. And so, you know, we've increased our presence. I don't know if you've seen that when you're driving through the city, but we have increased our presence in terms of, more motor units, more deployments where we have, you know, officers that now get, we have our, I don't know if you're aware of like hotspot policing, right? Where we, originally the idea is to identify locations that have the highest amount of violence. Well, we've taken that concept and we are now identifying those locations where we have the most collisions, traffic accidents, and we're dispatching cops at 15 minutes, 20 minutes at a time to those locations during the day, all based on data, and essentially having them check out and do nothing but traffic. So they're away from the call load. They're not having to respond to 911 calls. Their specific job is to be in that corridor or that intersection and conducting, you know, traffic enforcement. And that doesn't mean, you know, people get tickets, even though we're up in our traffic citations this compared to last year where we were at, we're up 27% in our written citations. But I think what's more important is that we're up about 80% in just our written warnings. So we're educating through written warning, not necessarily giving people tickets, more so, you know, just educating and hopefully changing and having an impact on people's driving behavior because, you know, we are a major city and, you know, we don't have, you know, obviously we have I-10, but that people getting from one side of town to the other, it just feels like everybody's in a rush to do it and get there. And we need to slow down. We need to make sure we're getting to our destination. We need to make sure we're wearing our seatbelt.
It feels like every cross town road now is a freeway.
Yeah.
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 So.
Yeah. And and in terms of, you know, pedestrians, I I've said before when I've spoken to people, a majority of them are not within a crosswalk. And I get some people have been even hitting crosswalks when they are, in those crosswalks. Mm-hmm. However, you know, I know that, you know, impairment has a huge impact as well on people walking into the street and not, not seeing vehicles coming. So, so we have to work on making sure that we're addressing, you know, even just our median violations, and jaywalking violations to help make sure that we're being smarter, when we're walking, driving or riding on our, you know, roadways.
Are there certain spots that are particularly bad? I mean, for pedestrian deaths, especially.
You know, I'd have to look at some of the data to see what particular areas. I know, in the past, you know, we had several on 22nd Street, but in terms of, and 4th Avenue, but in terms of a recent, they're kind of spread out, you know, across the city.
And the same thing with collisions. I mean, there's a certain intersection. I mean, there's always been certain intersections in Tucson that I think have kind of always notoriously been bad. But, you know, are those kind of, are there certain intersections where you really see problems where you really want to put officers on, or is it, again, spread out through the city? It's kind of a citywide problem.
It really is a citywide problem. I mean, there's certain intersections that, like you said, they're always popping up and always a problem. But yeah, I don't want to just name one.
You just don't want to pick one out of them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
With your officers, I mean, they're writing warnings. What are the things that they're writing warnings about?
Speeds. Yeah, speed is a huge factor still. Okay. Yeah, speeds. And, you know, and you see it. You go even driving through Broadway. I mean, the speed's, what, 35, 45? Mm-hmm. People want to go above that. And they're stopping people that are going over 50, like, usually. I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, chewed every case. But on average, it's like they're going over 10 miles per hour, the speed limit.
Right.
That's why we're stopping people. We're not just pulling people over because they're going five over.
Right.
But it is speeding is a huge concern. The left turns are a huge concern.
Should we bring back the cameras, the intersection cameras, red light cameras?
Well, that is certainly something that the city leadership is looking at, and make sure that, you know, that that we can look at that to see, and of course the voters have to approve that.
Mm-hmm.
But to see what will change driving behavior, and that's certainly a potential technology that could do that.
There's something called a HAWC, a high intensity activated crosswalk beacon. Mm-hmm. There are six of these now being installed. One was recently installed on North Euclid Avenue, mm-hmm. and East Second. That's where those three University of Arizona students were killed in a hit and run crash late October of 2025. Do you think the HAWC technology is a good way to go?
I think it's a good way as long as people are using it, right? using the crosswalks. But unfortunately, a large percentage of the pedestrian collisions, fatalities that you're seeing, they're not using a crosswalk. So it's just important to, yes, use those. Mm-hmm. I think they could, because they're high visibility. And, you know, it's important to just make sure you're making contact with the driver and you know that they're actually coming to a stop.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one benefit of the HAWC, like actually that intersection particularly, is that it's a bad spot about, it's hard to see that there are pedestrians moving around, and the HAWC kind of maybe gives you a, hey, you, there's actually a reason you need to stop. But yeah. I question, like, sometimes there's certain places where you can see where maybe enforcement would be a good. I always think of Mountain Avenue when the U of A students come back. There's always a certain... people think that the bike lanes are extra lanes.
So. Yeah. Again, driving behaviors, right? Everybody's sure. in a rush to get to where they need to go. And we really do have to take a breath. We got to start thinking, you know, we got to leave earlier and plan out and make sure we get to our destinations.
Monica Prieto is with us. Tucson's police chief, Paul Ingram, is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Let's go back to some of these snapshot of our crime. You mentioned that overall crime was down 20%, I believe you said?
Yeah, our violent crime, our part one violent crime, is down 20%.
And then what are some of the other statistics showing? As far as property theft, that's always been a problem in the area. Are you seeing that those property crimes have been going down or up, or what's the latest on that?
Property crime is, from what I understand, going down. I'm trying to look at some mm-hmm. stats here. Mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared to answer that one. Forgive me.
Right.
Let's see here.
Well, property crime, that had been a problem, Paul, because some folks were complaining that police just were not responding to some of those, just
right,
calling
right.
in a report.
Well, I mean, right. In some yeah. cases, I mean, calling in a report, the report is what really matters
right.
in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. also calling
for their
it in
insurance
because,
and the home. Yeah.
Right. But also for the Tucson police is to understand where those crimes are happening. I mean, mm-hmm. If you don't report something, then they don't know that that's occurring.
Mm-hmm.
If you do report it, at least that they have some paperwork. And probably, I think, in terms, some of that work has gone to the community service officers, right? So it's, you may not get a sworn-in officer, but someone's going to come and take the report. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the benefits of the CSO program, in part, is to take yeah. some of that load off.
Yeah, and just exactly right. Like, we need to be aware of where these crimes are happening. That way we know how to utilize our resources, right? Everything is data informed. So, and that's why we partnered with the U of A to do a survey on underreported crimes, so that we can get a sense of, well, why, you know, get that feedback, why people aren't reporting these lower level crimes. I did find my stats there. It's about 21% down year to date. The 5-year average on property crime is about 21%. But again, we got to make sure that we are taking into account those crimes that are not being reported to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The U of A survey, has that data come out yet, or is that something that's still ongoing?
It is not. It's still ongoing. Okay. I'm hoping in the next 2 to 3 months, we should have some data.
One thing I think is interesting too is, I mean, we keep kind of going back to the same thing. You're trying to use a lot of data to try to figure out how neighborhoods. Can you talk about some of the other programs you're doing? I want to get you to talk about the new program Troy, Viva, and the Safe City deployments. All of these things are sort of built on some sense of some data and some targeting. Can you talk about some of those programs, kind of glean out what the differences are between them and what each one is doing?
Yeah, I think it's no secret that, you know, we do have some quality of life issues in Tucson. And again, we're no different than any major city in the nation that is struggling with the opioid crisis, with the fentanyl crisis. And we're seeing it, right? We're seeing it by when we drive through the city. So one of the important things is making sure that we're addressing the underlying issues, but at the same time, making sure that we're holding people accountable. And that's why Troy, it was like trying to figure out what we can do as a department to really isolate those individuals with anywhere between 6 and 14 arrests in a year's time, to find out, like, obviously they're stuck in a cycle. They're stuck in a cycle where they're not getting the help that they need. And usually with the types of crimes, misdemeanor crimes that we're talking about, it's with individuals who have substance abuse issues or mental health issues. So what this pilot would allow us to do, and it's a 6-month pilot that we're doing on the west side of town, is really just to show, okay, who are these individuals who keep getting arrested or struggling the most, and let's get them first resources, mm-hmm. Utilizing our already existing, you know, resources that the city has, including our core unit and our MIST units, and doing that intentional outreach on those individuals to try to connect them to services, whether it's, you know, substance help or mental help, or housing. It's connection to services is priority. But then if they choose to reoffend, if they continue to reoffend where they're being arrested for these, you know, lower level crimes, misdemeanors like trespassing, urinating in public, median violations, then we are saying to the courts, look, this person was arrested for disorderly conduct once again. You know, they've been identified as somebody who's been arrested in the last year over 6 times, and we're concerned, and we'd like you to put more focus on getting them through. And we don't have a say in what the court, you know, chooses, or what prosecutors do, or what the judges decide, mm-hmm. but at least it gives them that information. Like, it kind of Because if they're, you know, someone's arrested in one part of town by one officer, it just kind of consolidates that, hey, this is a person, this is how many times they've been arrested, and we need to start doing something about it. We need to start making sure that there is consequences for reoffending, constantly mm-hmm. reoffending. And we're offering them the help, but obviously we need to do something on the accountability side if they're choosing to continue to reoffend.
It sounds like it's kind of an outgrowth of the Safe City deployments, where you were going to, like, specific neighborhoods, spending that time, but kind of doing the same process. But now, instead of going to a specific neighborhood, you're going to go look for a specific person. Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting you said during the study session on Tuesday was that this wasn't going to be a roundup.
Right.
You're not trying to go just arrest all these people and put them into jail, but it sounds like in some cases you would, because they're just, maybe that's the only way to, is that the only way to get, for people to get help, or what is, why would jail be the best thing for these first
sometimes
folks?
It is, because sometimes it takes that to leverage, you know, treatment by arresting, by putting them in the judicial system where they can have court-ordered treatment, and if they're not meeting that expectation, then there's consequences for not meeting those expectations. So so that is the hope, but obviously we don't decide the consequences, but the hope is that, you know, eventually they will be successful and improve.
It seems like so many of these, I think somebody once said, bad things happen after midnight downtown. I don't know, do most of the businesses close at 2 a.m. or 3 or
Yeah, you're talking to someone who goes to bed probably by 9 p.m. But
well,
I
you're
think
looking at, you've got a mutual,
mutual I know there's a lot of
compadre
clubs.
In that area, I'll tell you. But I mean, because this incident happening at 2 o'clock in the morning, I don't
2
know.
2 a.m. is closing time for
maybe Paul
the bars.
Knows. Maybe yeah, Paul hangs well, out I mean, downtown.
All right, it's somebody who stays up apparently way later than everybody else.
Okay, well, you're the man. Tell me, please.
I mean, one thing I think is this town gets pretty quiet after 10 o'clock. The 10 o'clock is kind of the witching hour for just
yeah,
about everything.
I would think
but,
so.
But there are certain things that are open past midnight. So there's always been this. I mean, I have a teenage son. He's 16, and he wants to stay out late. And one of the things I go, no, look, nothing good happens after midnight. and this seems to be pretty true. You know, as in the but yeah, I mean, certainly there's businesses open. There's of course bars that are serving last mm-hmm. call is at 1 o'clock. Bars close at 2, so 2 mm. o'clock is sometimes maybe a troublesome time, but, you know, that's maybe why you have lots of officers down, but, you know, but I also mean it's right, but our expectation is maybe people get a little drunk and maybe they do some stupid things, but on the other hand, shooting 9 people is very different.
Right.
But we're maybe not the only place that's had a mass shooting this year, and there's been 300 mass shootings, and there were multiple, there were like 6 on Sunday all across the nation. Including one where 2 people were killed and 7 were wounded, one in Minneapolis, and I forgot where the other one is. But it's something that unfortunately does happen. It's part of life.
Yeah, a lot of our gun crime is between two parties that are disagreeing, right? And they don't know how to resolve conflict without a weapon. So how do we as a community get more involved and engaged with our youth to, you know, to try to talk those things out and to teach them de-escalation techniques so they're not just being, you know, reactive and reaching for a gun first thing. Like we have to address that piece because that is, you know, we do see, you know, gunshot wound victims and it is because of some type of conflict and almost every time or they're, you know, or they're committing a felony, a robbery. And so it is about, and like I mentioned, you know, a good majority is they're under 25 years old. So how do we reach that that particular group? And we do a lot of work with the village through Goodwill and trying to make referrals when we do see individuals who are victims or witnesses in a shooting. You know, we have a community violence interruption specialists that we hired who makes referrals to Goodwill so that they can send credible messengers out to these folks and try to give them resources and in a lot of instances have stopped retaliation because it's like they go out and they talk to them about like, hey, these are the consequences. And if you continue hanging out these individuals and continue this lifestyle, there's more probability that you are going to become a homicide victim. Mm-hmm. And that's fact. So like trying to get those credible messengers and working with those nonprofit groups that that can do those outreach efforts for us and, you know, and making sure that we're educating people and keeping them from, you know, from this lifestyle.
One bad thing that happens late at night are these intersection takeovers. Have we seen a decrease in that?
We have seen a decrease and you know, and I tell you, we take it very serious. We started centralizing those investigations and doing follow-up on those investigations and doing search warrants and taking cars and getting cell phones. And we've seen, you know, and I just saw a message recently of a post where some of those organizers are telling people, hey, Tucson is like, they're going to take your car. So we need to slow it down. And we've seen a decrease in that activity.
All right, let's take a break right here. We'll have another segment 3, another 10 minutes or so with the chief of police in the city of Tucson, Monica Prieto. Paul Ingram is here as well from TucsonSentinel.com. Chief, do you have any idea how many women are police chiefs? Is it still probably a very small percentage in the country?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I'm sure it's a small percentage.
Yeah, but there is a growing number of women on the Tucson Police Department, correct?
We are currently at about 17% sworn of our sworn women and of our sworn rank, and then we have about 32% total with pro staff and sworn.
Very good. We'll take a break right here, a little bit more with the chief right after this.
Congratulations to KVOI 1030 The Voice radio host Bill Buckmaster on his nomination to the Tucson Weekly 2026 Best of Contest in the category of Best Local Radio Host. Votes must be submitted through TucsonWeekly.com. Limit one vote per category, per email address, per day. Voting ends at noon on August 24th, and once again, votes must be submitted at TucsonWeekly.com. Good luck, Bill!
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Food insecurity is a huge challenge in our community. Please consider donating to the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona and Interfaith Community Services. And don't forget our animal friends, supported by the Southern Arizona Food Bank, which makes sure no one ever has to make a choice of feeding their pets or feeding their families. Let's make sure no one goes hungry in Southern Arizona. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Glad you are with us. We're here each Friday, noon to one. We bring in a newsmaker each week. This week, it is the chief of police. She has been in her role as top cop, if you will, since February of this year. And she is Monica Prieto, who's no stranger to this department. She's been with the department working her way up for really a quarter of a century plus. Paul Ingram is here, senior reporter for the TucsonSentinel.com. Going back, Chief, to Sunday morning's incident downtown, the Pima County Sheriff's Department is actually is the lead investigative unit now on the shooting. Why is that?
Yeah, so several years ago, you started seeing a practice change. So before that time, we would investigate, criminally, we would investigate an employee who was involved in a shooting, in a critical
incident.
We've all
seen the TV shows, the internal affairs department.
Yeah, and we
right?
still have an internal affairs investigation occur during these incidents, just to review whether the employee was within policy. We review supervision. We review whether we had the right equipment, use the right tactics. That's a separate type of review. Mm-hmm. What we were interested in doing, and what the regional leaders at that time did several years ago, was say, look, we need to be more transparent, and we can no longer investigate our own, do our own criminal investigations on people who are involved in shootings. And so Born was the Pima Regional Critical Incident Team. Mm-hmm. We lovingly call PCRIT. And essentially it's activated and comprised of all our regional partners. So you have Oro Valley, you have Marana, Sahuarita, South Tucson, you have Pascuayaki. So you have the various departments, Sheriff's Department, of course, and we send investigators to, any shooting in the region, and no agency investigates their own. Mm-hmm. And so...
So you guys could go investigate if there was an incident in South Tucson or one of the other jurisdictions.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, we would go and investigate. So this this particular one from Sunday is being investigated by is led by the Sheriff's Department. There's still various detectives from the region who are assisting, but it is led by the Sheriff's Department.
Here's Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com.
One question that I wanted to get back to, we're about Sunday shooting, is there was the question about the guy who shot it, shot everyone, had a gun, had already gone through a criminal procedure, was on probation. You know, in part, he was somebody who got a gun that was, I think, stolen in the previous instance. You know, what's the difficulty in going after people and prosecuting people who have illegal guns, maybe because they're not allowed to have a gun or because they have a gun that was stolen or a ghost gun, et cetera? You know, what's difficult about pursuing those cases? And then what's difficult about somebody who's on probation who then gets themselves a gun?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. So this particular individual 2 years ago was arrested with amazing detective work from our team, and you know, he essentially pointed a rifle and fired a rifle at an unarmed car wash employee, mm-hmm. and you know, he was identified and arrested, and detectives did an amazing case. And then the next step is we give it to the county attorney for review, and the county attorney takes it through the adjudication process. You know, obviously he was given probation, mm-hmm. and you know, and was made a prohibited possessor. And so it's incredible, you know, frustrating when you have violent offenders who are offending, you know, continue to offend. But the main question should be, like, why, you know, how do we address those people? Because they don't have respect for the law, and they surely don't have respect for the sanctity of human life. So what are we doing to hold those folks accountable? You know, when they do have dangerous instruments, like a weapon, like an AR-15 style weapon. Mm-hmm. And I think you've seen it. It's factual. He was on probation. You know, again, we're just a small part of the criminal justice system. And it's important to talk about that. It's important to talk about. And, you know, we have, you know, case after case as well that, you know, we have prohibited possessors who are still committing shootings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they are getting the gun from somewhere, right? Whether it's from someone who, you know, who gave them a gun, or it's stolen. It's, you know, stolen from a car that, you know, it wasn't secured properly. It's incredibly frustrating, but the guns are getting in the hands of, you know, folks that just clearly don't have any, you know, any mm-hmm. respect for the law and what laws are.
It seems like in part that there's enough guns coming from enough different channels that if somebody who shouldn't have a gun wants to get a gun, they can. Is there some things that TPD specifically can do to try to maybe mitigate that, maybe cut that back, maybe investigate people who are involved? What can you do?
Yeah. Less than a minute, Chief, before we have to wrap up.
We do a lot of investigations. We have detective teams that are, you know, look at where guns come from. A lot of them are shared amongst individuals that just pass them around, right? And they're crime guns. But we work really hard. We are a gun crime organization that we take shell casings, and we can do investigations that way, and we work with our federal partners to try to identify what these crime guns are and connect them to shootings, so that way it can help us, you know, do better investigations. So I can do a whole show on, you know, investigations related to guns and crimes.
All right, Chief Prieto, we're going to have to let you go on that note. Thank you very much for your first visit to our show, and it will not be the last, I hope. Try to get you on the program every quarter or so to give us an update on what's going on with law enforcement. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Paul Ingram, thank you, Paul.
Thanks. And thanks for
maybe
me.
We'll have you stick around for Weekend Watch.
Sure.
Coming up here next on The Buckmaster Show. Take a break, and we'll be back with Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, our sister station and partner, presented by Silver City. Be right back.
The new Regional Transportation Authority Plan is delivering long-term upgrades to transportation infrastructure across our region. Everything from roadway improvements to expanded transit and new bicycle and pedestrian connections. These projects are designed to keep you moving, connected, and support our community. Visit rtamobility.com for updates on what's happening near you. That's rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we make it easy to fly from the moment you arrive.
Hop in. We'll get you from parking to the terminal in no time.
We keep our lines short so you can get to your gate quickly.
Why deal with the big city airport when you can relax with our dining options before your trip?
We'll get you off the gate and into the air fast.
At TUS, we make it easy. Visit flytucson.com. Now with nonstop flights to Portland, Las Vegas, and Salt Lake City.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Travel is my lifelong passion, visiting more than 100 countries, all 50 states, and flying on nearly 75 different airlines. I'm ready to talk travel anytime, anywhere. That's why I'm excited about our new monthly Travel Talk podcast, hosted by Bon Voyage Travel President Ryan Hansen. Check out the latest travel trends on Travel Talk at bvtravel.com. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Coming up on Friday, the 31st of July, we'll speak with Pima County Health Director Dr. Teresa Cullen. Joining me in the interview, Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. It's Buckmaster each Friday at noon on 1030 KVOI The Voice, always on buckmastershow.com, the place for our live listening of the show, the podcast, and complete show archive. Time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. Silver City and Grant County's an easy three-hour drive or so east of Tucson. Here's the easy selling point for Silver City, 5,000 to 7,000 feet elevation. It means it's going to be cooler. A lot cooler in some cases, at least 10 degrees cooler during the day, and the nights are just delightful over there. A ton of stuff to do as well. Visit silvercity.org. Ken Carr is here, the legendary Ken Carr from The Drive 101.7. Ken, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm impressed by the fact that you got me as an opening act, the chief of police for the city of Tucson.
Certainly going to be the hottest today, maybe the hottest, or maybe tomorrow, the hottest day of the year. We haven't had a 110 officially so far, which is a bit unusual, Paul Ingram.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking that we needed a 110. There was something that missing in our lives.
You feel like just had to hit that number so you could feel like you really endured summer again.
So that I could burn myself on my steering wheel once again, yes.
Yeah.
My little pause. All right, here's what's going on this weekend. Family Fun Fest at the Tankaverde Swap Meet on Palo Verde. Live music. If you've when you think swap meet, you think live music.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. I'm sure you can pick it up for, I'd like to buy the live music, but I'd like it $2 off. Face painting, balloon artists, ride wristband deals, food deals. So sounds like a lot of fun. That's tomorrow night from 7 to 10. It might be a little warm. So don't dress, don't bring a sweater.
Venue, where is that going to be?
At the Tankaverde Swap Meet on Palo Verde.
Okay.
Right down the street from the radio station.
Okay.
Trevor the Musical. This is kind of a fun production. And that's tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at the Live Theater Workshop, 3322 East Fort Lowell. And it's a musical production. And picture this, 1981. Trevor Nelson is busy navigating adolescence in suburbia while dreaming of a life in show business. It sounds like Mr. Buckmaster's
It does, doesn't it?
Life story, right?
Yeah, right there. Uh-huh. Yep. You got me there. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they just changed the name from Bill to Trevor,
there
the musical.
You go. All right.
All right. Old Tucson night markets. You know, the night markets have been really popular this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, they really have.
And Old Tucson doing another one coming up tomorrow night from 6:30 to 10. Of course, on Kenny Road, 35 local vendors showcasing food, arts, crafts, rides, free parking and admission. And one other thing, you know William Shatner's coming to town.
No, I did not.
No, that's really? A little later, the weekend of September 4th through the 6th. You know how he's getting here?
No.
He's beaming in.
Oh, beam me up, Scotty.
And also at the same event, the original Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, wow.
So, Comic-Con and other places?
Wow.
No, Tucson Comic-Con. Ding.
All right. Ken Carr, thank you very much. Paul Ingram, thank you very much. We'll look for your work at the Sentinel. Thank you. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks a lot, Brendan, on the other side of the glass, and the whole team here at Bustos Media. Have a great weekend.